Hi, and welcome to the Kubernetes podcast from Google. I'm Craig Box with my very special guest host, Jimmy Moore. As a rule, we don't try and talk too much about current events, especially the unpleasant ones. But Jimmy was actually present in Manhattan 20 years ago this week when 9/11 happened, and I asked him to tell a little bit of his story of that day.
Yeah, hey, thanks, Craig. First of all, I can't believe it's been 20 years, as I'm sure everyone says, because it happened when I was 21 and I'm only 31 now, so I'm not sure how the math is going.
That is pretty magic math there.
Yeah. And of course, I don't mean to glamorize it at all, you know, but I feel like it's a story where people have a lot of questions and they're curious about what actually happened beyond what we see on TV and the same images year after year or all the films that have been made. So I figured I'd share a little bit about what happened to me that day. And obviously, I was really fortunate. I lived in New York. I was an aspiring actor just out of college, and I lived in Queens. I was in Lower Manhattan with my two roommates, and we all had the same job. We were temping at a magazine, doing surveys for a magazine. We came out of the subway that day, and we actually heard the first plane hit and, you know, came around the corner and saw this building with a giant hole in it, thinking, wow, I can't believe a plane just accidentally hit that building. And I said out loud, how are they going to fix that hole? Mm-hmm. You know, and I thought about like how disorganized all that paperwork was going to be and like how do you even fix a moment like that? Like no idea what was happening, right? Just these strange like, wow, that's going to be a hard fix. So we go on our way to work, right? We don't want to be late. We don't want to lose our job. So we go on our way to work. And at this magazine, we can see the two towers from the window. And we're all looking out this window at this one tower on fire. And all of a sudden, the second tower explodes out towards us. Not knowing it was a plane, but we saw it explode out. Debris hit our windows. And I looked at my roommates and I said, well, we're going to leave. And the woman who was supervising us, mind us, you know, we were temps. So I think it was like an intern that was supervising us. And she's like, well, I don't know if we're closing yet. And I was like, okay, well, I quit. So we're going to go. Mm-hmm. So I quit our job on the spot. I brought my two roommates to the ATM and I said, we need to get some cash because the financial center of the universe is falling apart. And, as I was getting my cash out after the two of them kind of started to rumble and the connection was lost. So we kind of started running uptown, crisscrossing the city, avoiding the Empire State Building, trying to avoid the United Nations, you know, hearing all sorts of news. My one roommate, Michelle, was crying because her feet were hurting because we were running and she was in heels. And my other roommate was panicking that the gas lines were going to explode. So I stopped and bought her some slippers at Duane Reade, bought him some chocolate, and I decided I would start smoking again that day.
A somewhat sensible decision, given the circumstances.
Given the moment, right?
Hopefully a temporary one.
Yeah, definitely a temporary one. I'm happy to say that silver lining. You know, we got up to the Queensboro Bridge after several hours, which is about halfway up Manhattan. And by this point, emergency vehicles were coming into town and people were walking out of town on the lower level. So we pretty much in silence with thousands of people were walking across this bridge. And I've never been so happy to be in Queens, never been so happy to get to a McDonald's and just eat and watch what was happening on the news. It took us a few more hours to get back to our apartment in Queens that day. And I realized I was a resident assistant in college, and I think that training really helped me a lot. They prepared us for emergencies, probably never for one of that scale. My kind of final takeaway that I usually share with people is that what they don't show in action movies is the action star falling apart in the bathtub at the end of a big day, because that sure would be a lot more realistic than it was for me.
Well, thank you very much for sharing that story. I don't really want to end on that note. So there's a link in the show notes to something from my hometown back in New Zealand, where a gentleman was trying to record a voicemail message to say that the movie theater was closed because the country is in lockdown. And he didn't quite have the same editors that we have on the show. So he had a couple of attempts at it. And unfortunately, the entire message, warts and all, went out on the voicemail. It's quite something.
It's incredible. I listened to this and I laughed. I shared it with my roommates. I sent it to some friends. It is fantastic. It's definitely great for a laugh.
And not just for the funny accent.
Oh, no, not just for the accent. I mean, this man was having a hard time and he just let the whole world see it.
All right, well, let's get to the news. Last year at AWS reInvent, Amazon pre-announced an EKS Anywhere service for running Kubernetes clusters on-premises. That service is GA this week with support for running clusters on VMware. Bare Metal is now promised for 2022. Additionally, an EKS connector has been launched in preview, allowing you to connect any Kubernetes cluster to the EKS console. Congratulations to our friends at the bookshop, and we trust that the Anthos team is going to send you a cake.
The container network interface spec has reached 1.0. There are only a couple of minor changes to the spec, though the authors say that there are, quote, way more tests. Instead, 1.0, or actually 1.0.1, is all about the declaration of API stability. Congratulations to the maintainers.
Red Cubes is a Dutch startup building Otomi, a distribution which includes add-ons to Kubernetes in the manner a Linux distribution is bundled with applications that run on the kernel. This week, Otomi's developer self-service features were moved from their 4-pay Enterprise Edition into their open-source Community Edition. Red Cubes also introduced a Helm chart for easier deployment of Otomi.
Two new features have been added to Microsoft's AKS this week. Scale-down mode lets you stop instances upon scaling down instead of deleting them. Disks and their cached images remain available for you when you scale up again. Custom Azure Policy lets you create and assign custom policy definitions and constraint templates to your AKS clusters.
In a world of Helm and operators, it may not be clear to you when you should use one over the other. The K8 Sandra community has walked this path recently, with Jeff Carpenter and John Sander from DataStax writing up their findings. K8 Sandra version 1.x was installed with a combination of Helm and operators. Future improvements, for example, adding multi-cluster support, made a Helm install too complicated and the charts too hard to debug. They are now working on a 2.x series built on the operator SDK, but that operator will still be installed by, you guessed it, Helm.
Episode 113 guest David Ashpole talked about instrumentation of containers and Kubernetes, and teased the arrival of distributed tracing in the API server. It arrived in alpha in Kubernetes 1.22, and David has written a blog post introducing the feature. By adding OpenTelemetry support to the API server and utilizing etcd's tracing support, you can get a nice graph of what's happening when a request is processed.
Finally, it's not quite a book by Walter Isaacson, but Scott Carey from InfoWorld has written the somewhat inside story of what happened at Docker. Carey tells the story of Docker's early days as .cloud, see episode 156, up until it split in two and the acquisition of its enterprise business by Mirantis, which you heard about in episode 110. There's some opinion, but there's also some valuable insight from those that were there, which mostly boils down to they missed Kubernetes.
And that's the news.
Alejandro de Brito Fontes is a software developer from Argentina living in Santiago, Chile. He's currently an engineer at Gitpod. Ricardo Katz is a CNCF ambassador living in Sao Paulo in Brazil. He's currently an engineer at VMware. Welcome to the show, Alejandro.
Thank you, Craig. Glad to be here.
And welcome to the show, Ricardo.
Thank you, Craig. I'm glad to be here.
I think all three of us started working professionally with Linux in the early 2000s. Do you think everyone from that era is working with Kubernetes now?
I think that we were preparing for this now. We were using Linux for 20 years just for Kubernetes. It's a lot easier to expose features to end users now.
Yeah, I agree with that. You are not the old sys admin anymore. You can just say, hey, everything just spins around Kubernetes, right?
Well, I'm glad that you say that because I used to identify as a sysadmin. We hadn't invented DevOps yet, so I didn't feel bad about not doing it.
Yeah.
Same here. I started as a sysadmin and then I switched to software developer.
You both grew up in South America, Alejandro in Argentina, Ricardo in Brazil. What was computing like for you growing up?
I started with an XT model. Mm-hmm. We didn't have a Mac or anything like that. And it was really hard because I still remember the modems and the connection to the internet in the early days. So, yeah, it was fun, for sure.
Yeah.
Downloading updates, it was really painful at the time.
My mother is actually a software developer as well. Mm-hmm. I've got a computer at my home since I was like a child. It was a Dell 486. But I wasn't supposed to spend too much time on the computer because it was like the work tool of my mother, right? Mm-hmm. We've got, as Alejandro said, like those slow connections. By that time, I didn't actually got a connection. So I've used computers mostly to play pinball. The pinball in Windows 95, I guess, right?
Windows 95.
Yeah, the pinball one was really cool, or 98, I think.
Many hundreds of hours must have been lost to that pinball game.
Yeah, I'm playing the flight simulator in Microsoft Excel, the Easter egg one. Do you remember that one? Mm-hmm. It was mostly about that. We didn't got computers in school, for example. So it wasn't something that everybody got access early in South America. To be honest, I think that this is changing just right now. I got the privilege of having contact with computers early in my age.
When you both started out in computing, was all the information available to you in English, or was any of it translated and available in Spanish or Portuguese?
I learned English thanks to this, mm-hmm. because my first book was the Slugware Bible, the first release a long time ago.
Same to me. We've got, in the beginning of Linux, there was a cool guide in Portuguese called Foca Linux, mm-hmm. which was a folk that translated a lot of things of Linux from English to Portuguese. So we've got a bunch of materials in Portuguese, and we have a strong open source community here. We've got a lot of folks translating, but the majority of materials, they were in English as well.
What were your first contributions to open source?
My real first contribution to open source was a documentation on some plugin from Elasticsearch. My development contribution, like doing some code, was for Harbor, the Docker registry from the company that I worked that was donated to CNCF.
For me, it was fixed for Apache Poi a long time ago. That was never merged. It was rejected, actually. So that was my first contact with open source.
Not all contributions get accepted, unfortunately, but it doesn't seem like it put you off.
Yeah, you can say that, yeah.
You're both longtime maintainers and, in Alejandro's case, the originator of the Ingress Nginx controller for Kubernetes. Tell me a little bit about the history of the project. When we take our time machine back, we will remember that Ingress didn't exist in Kubernetes 1.0, and when it was introduced in 1.1, there was support for Google Cloud's load balancer, but really nothing else.
We need to keep in mind that working in the project for the last 6 years, I started in April of 2015, and at the time I was using something called CoreOS Fleet. Mm-hmm. It was almost perfect at the time. I was working also in the project called DAIS. It's an open source bus. Mm-hmm. At some point, I reached a limit with CoreOS Fleet. It was like something like 300 services. That was the reason that I started to research Kubernetes. Like you just said, at the time, there was no Ingress yet. You only have the core services, pods, services, and replica sets.
Replication controllers.
Yes, exactly. But at the time, there was a project called Contrib in the Kubernetes organization, where you can find a sub-project called Service Load Balancer, mm-hmm. that basically is just a primitive controller, if you compare it with what we had now with KubeBuilder, that basically is a proxy with the templates. Some annotations in services allows you to expose some services in a centralized way. Of course, at the time, we have no client Go yet, so the bugs and all that stuff, it was interesting to find and in production, of course. But a couple months after I started using it, I started to contribute in the project, and by November, some members of the Google network team started to write what you will call now a CAP, mm-hmm. to something called Ingress. And the goal was to release it before 1.0. Like you just said, we have it there, but only with one implementation, the Ingress GCE controller. When I saw that, I started to think about the Ingress Nginx. That was the origin of the project. The original idea was to use something called third-party resources. It's the father of the CRDs that we have now. Mm-hmm. That never was merged in the project. It was a really cool idea, but the API machinery was not there yet. And that's how I started the project. Eventually, someone asked me if I want to upstream the project, because this was in personal repository.
The design work, I remember, largely being done by Tim Hocken and Prashanth Balasubramanian, better known as Beeps.
Exactly. He was the person that asked me about the contribution to the project. Mm-hmm.
Just to give an explanation of how the system worked, you have an Ingress object, which you basically define what it is that you want in terms of routing rules, for example, to map external paths to service backends. And then you need some sort of controller that's running. If you have a load balancer available in your cloud, like the GCE implementation, it would take those rules and then program the load balancer. for someone who was running in bare metal or on an environment that didn't have that layer 7 load balancer, they would have to deploy one or more instances of some software that would handle that. You mentioned the service load balancer, and there was also an HA proxy router at the time. What was it in particular about Nginx that made that the software that got adopted as the de facto standard?
I was more familiar with Nginx. That's the only reason. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a technical decision, actually. It's simple as that. And also, I was doing a lot of microservices at the time, and I needed more a mix between applications and microservices, and Nginx was easier than HAProxy, for me, at least.
Was this something that was commercially inspired? Was this a problem that you had at the company you were working at the time?
Actually, no. I built this for Bare Metal because I was running in Bare Metal and I could not use the GCP cloud for political reasons. And that's why I started Ingress Nginx, actually. And I was the first user of this. I built this for me, actually. I never planned for Ingress Nginx as you know it right now.
I'll put a link in the show notes to a picture of that Bare Metal cluster. It seems to be running in a suitcase.
Yes. That was an interesting experiment because I built a case with 4 Intel NACs, a switch there. I will maintain this right now in the theory iteration. It's a cool thing to do if you want to learn Kubernetes without breaking anything.
And so then, Ricardo, when did you get involved with the project?
My best job was at a government company here in Brazil. And we decided to use Kubernetes for all of the services. As Alejandro explained it, we started with service load balancer, which was pretty cool. I mean, because it was simple. It was a really simple, nice approach of adding annotations into services and it routing stuff for you. But it didn't scale well. By that time, Ingress didn't exist as well. So we couldn't use GCP as well because a Brazilian government company, by that time, they weren't supposed to use any public cloud. Mm-hmm. I don't know how is this nowadays. So Ingress was released and I told my team, hey, look at this project. Let's try and see how it happens because this service load balancer is going to be deprecated and they have already marketed that as deprecated, right? So we started to use Ingress Nginx by that time. There was a folk in my team, which is João, and we have a fun story about that later, but João started doing some researches into the Ingress Nginx and I was doing some researches with him and we decided to migrate from service load balancer to Ingress Nginx by that time to have some scalability and some features that you didn't get into the service load balancer. And also because we were already on the bleeding edge, I guess, using Kubernetes on a government company, right? Because government, usually they say, oh, everything is so old, you have mainframes, you have all of those old machines, they are getting yellow inside the data center. So Kubernetes was already the bleeding edge. And we said, hey, we are already on the bleeding edge, so let's just use this Ingress and see how it breaks stuff for us.
Would you describe Brazilian government infrastructure as more XT or more 486?
I would say actually that we got a real modern architecture here. People usually think that government stuff, they are old, right? We actually have old processes. I can't say we've got, I am not already there, but we've got a lot of good employees trying to make things work on a modern way. So integrating things that always run on a mainframe with something modern like Kubernetes. And this got a lot of fun for me running those stuffs in Bare Metal.
How does the controller know how many instances of Nginx it needs to spin up to handle the traffic coming into the cluster?
It doesn't. By default, there's no horizontal pod autoscaler enabled, but it expects that you set the number of replicas that you want.
I imagine when you started the project, there was no horizontal pod autoscaler.
Exactly, yes.
So it's just down to the sysadmin, if you will, to decide how many instances they need to create.
Yes. Basically, at the time, it was easier because it was just a daemon set or the precursor of that. Just one instance per node. Mm-hmm.
A pet set.
Exactly.
This podcast is a fun journey through deprecated memory lane. You've created this project to scratch your own itch, to help run your suitcase of NUCs, as it were. When did you notice that people started using it?
That's easy, because when you start receiving feature requests to add new things, and you start hearing about new use cases that you never thought about. To be clear, I never expected to expose all the features from Nginx. You can hear now that people complain about the number of annotations. Mm-hmm. And that is just a side effect of what we have at the time, only annotations. That's when I started to hear about the traction of the project.
What features did you expect would be in the project?
None. Just expose a service and the easy use cases.
Okay.
Not doing things like SSL pass-through or using it as a cache, for instance.
And how much did the things that were possible in Nginx influence how the ingress capabilities in Kubernetes evolved?
This was like an experiment at the time, because we didn't know exactly what user expect from something like ingress. Keep in mind that when ingress was released, there was no airbag at the time.
No.
So you can still hear people complaining about why I need to define the secrets in the same namespace that the ingress. That means that I need to expose the secret to someone that maybe doesn't have the permissions. And that is just a side effect of how old ingress is.
Ricardo, do you remember what features worked for you and what things needed to be added when you came across this as an early adopter?
Yeah, I do, because it was something like, we shouldn't be doing this in a cloud-native world, but we are. The first one feature that I am taking a look is actually about TLS mutual authentication feature by itself, because we've got a lot of services that needed mutual authentication and users' credentials, and Ingress didn't support that. So that was the first one. But that one is good because security is good, right? The worst one, I know that still being used nowadays, is about session affinity, because we've got a lot of Java with JSession IDs, the old Java server face stuff running inside Kubernetes. And when Ingress balances to one or other pod, you break the user workflow. So those were the first features that we've implemented into that. The original one, they were just fine. It dealt with a lot of traffic by that time without those features.
Alejandro, you're maintaining this project in your evenings, and it's starting to become a very, very important part of Kubernetes. How did you handle the growing number of feature requests and the dependency that the community had on this project?
I didn't realize this until 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was really fun at the time. I never saw this as a job, but I understood the importance of this project for some people. Eventually, that's what the reason why I put so much effort in maintaining it.
Mm-hmm.
Always try to be responsive in the issues, releasing at a constant rate, like 5 or 6 weeks at least.
Were you able to bring on other maintainers?
Yes. We need to understand in Kubernetes, it's really interesting to see that people can arrive to a project just to fix something that they need or they want to add, and they leave. It's hard to get maintainers for long periods of time. It was interesting, you can see now in the stats of the project that there's almost 700 contributors to the project.
Mm-hmm.
And for instance, there's companies like Shopify that are using Ingress Nginx in production, and they have one member of the engineering team doing Ingress Nginx. So that's right.
Were people at those companies, or maybe even at Nginx Incorporated, reaching out to you and offering to help?
No, we tried to reach Nginx before the F5 acquisition to merge both projects, the one from Nginx, the company, and the one from the community. And they say that they were not interested in doing that at the time because they want to pursue the commercial version of Nginx, not the open source one.
And so, Ricardo, you started contributing around 2017 when you were using it and you had a team of people working there. How did you become a maintainer of the project?
Back by that time, I was one of those persons that came, did something, and I didn't actually left, but I wasn't like a reviewer or an issue triager the same way that we have in Kubernetes community, right? I kept this contact with Alejandro for some time, and sometimes he asked me like, hey, I'm implementing this feature, so you as a user, what do you think about that? You use that? And I kept this sort of contact. I wasn't quite a maintainer, but as soon as Alejandro decided to step down, I felt that I had some sort of depth with the project, because I've learned to code Go because of the project. So I got a lot of opportunities by that. And Antonio Ojea, he asked me and said, hey, I know that you contribute. So why no one is getting this? Because Ingress API version 1 is going to be GA and version 1 beta 1 is going to be deprecated. And I said, yeah, maybe I can try to implement that thing. And I reached Alejandro and he told me, okay, if you try to implement this thing, probably people are going to think that you are going to be the maintainer. Or if you try, we've got actually a CVE back in that time as well. It was like a security problem. And I said, hey, I know that you are not with this anymore, but I think that we should fix this for the user. So can you teach me how to make the release? And he told me, as soon as you make one release, people are going to think that you are the maintainer. So be aware of that. And I said, yeah, I think that I can live with that, but I won't spend my daytime or everything. So people need to be aware that I won't put the same effort that you've been putting because I have not this time to do that.
Let's step back a little bit from that. You gave a talk at a Rejects conference once upon a time talking about ingress and implementations. What was the story with that talk?
Yeah, so that one was fun. I was at Rejects in Barcelona 2019. And I gave a lightning talk because my talk was rejected in KubeCon. So I decided to give that in Rejects as a lightning talk. They said, hey, anybody that wants to say about something, just came here and say about something. My talk was about scaling Kubernetes in a huge bare metal environment. So we've got machines with 768 gigabytes of memory in my previous job, running something like 500 to 600 of pods per node. It's not recommended. Please don't do that. But anyway, we've got something like that. Then I decided to tell people what were the problems that we faced with network policies and IP tables reconciliation. And one of the parts was, hey, we've got a lot of users and they have access to ingress and they can create their own ingress. And when they do something wrong, you get on a real problem because ingress became an infinite loop trying to reconcile objects and to reconcile stuff, and you get a lot of CPU and memory. So I started ranting not about ingress in Nginx by itself, but saying, yeah, you might have problem with your users trying to do that and having a lot of CPU usage. So be aware of this problem. I know that ingress in Nginx folks, they are working on dynamic reloads. Alejandro told about Shopify folks, Elvin. Anyway, just be aware that this might be a problem. When that talk was over, I went into my place and someone came to me and said, hey, so you are Ricardo? And I said, yeah. So, hey, hello, I am Alejandro, the maintainer of Ingress in Nginx. Thanks for the feedback on the Rejects talk. And I say, yeah, I think that at least I didn't say that Ingress in Nginx is bad, but this infinite loop and the reconciliation is bad. And he told me, yeah, we need help. I need your feedback. I need your help. So just feel free to keep doing those stuff. That was the way that we've met personally each other. And after that, we went into a contributor summit, drink some beers. João Moraes, which is actually the HAProxy Ingress maintainer, was from my team. So we've got a meeting from the Ingress's implementations maintainers having some beers at that KubeCon.
Is that how you remember the story too, Alejandro?
Yes. It's funny how things happen. I never expected to meet Ricardo in Barcelona, but it was fun.
A long way for the both of you to fly to meet one another.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
You decided to stand down as the maintainer of the project earlier this year. I guess there are two questions. Why did you decide that was the right time? And on the flip side, why did you do it for so long?
I decided to step down because for 2.5 years, I tried to find sponsors for my time in the project without much success. Now that I'm here, I need to say that in the last few months, Shopify sponsored part of my time. So thank you, Shopify, for that. But it's really hard to get the sponsors in open source.
Yes.
Also, if a project is present in the Kubernetes organization, doesn't mean that it's being supported financially. Maybe people in the project is just doing it for free. So please support those projects. That was the main reason, actually.
And that's not necessarily only a Kubernetes problem. After some of the SSL bugs a few years back, there was a real attention brought to the fact that there were these key pieces of Unix and internet infrastructure that were essentially maintained by one person in their spare time, or in some cases, not maintained by anybody at all. And there was a fund put together, I guess, to help sponsor some of those things. Do you think it's time that we extended that to Kubernetes projects as well?
I don't know. I think that this is a known problem. Everyone knows about this. This is not new, but someone needs to take action. Maybe the CNCF? I don't know.
Ricardo, you took action.
Yeah, when Alejandro told me about this sponsorship, I actually asked him why he didn't open the GitHub sponsor on GitHub. But by that time, Chile wasn't on the list, right?
I'm still in the waiting list after 3 years.
See? Yeah, so that one was a first approach. And I think that from a user perspective, I can say that I sponsored some folks on GitHub. I know that it's pretty hard for those folks to have a hobby project that becomes like a pillar of the internet. There is that fun XKCD or something like that of like the infrastructure of internet and a small piece supporting everything. And I don't know if you saw already that, but I can tell you. I saw that and I faced it like Alejandro position and the curl maintainer as well on that one, because it's not your day job. It's not something that pays your bills, right? It's just fun and it becomes important for people. So the action that I took was actually, I think that for Alejandro legacy as well, that project shouldn't die. Mm-hmm. And my action was, okay, I'm going to step forward to maintain that and try at least to form a community of people that wants to help. I think that my biggest achievement in Ingress Nginx right now wasn't releasing version one, that actually was forming and getting some folks that really want to help and really want to reveal. So we have Elvin from Shopify, which Alejandro told, and we have James and Jin Tao and Long and other folks that saw the opportunity to become a contributor to something from Kubernetes, inside Kubernetes organization, but not actually the Kubernetes upstream code, and being like issue reviewer and et cetera. And this was actually the action that I think that I took, was like trying to form folks that really wants to maintain, because I don't think that I'm going to be in this project forever. The same thing that happened to Alejandro, like I have other stuff to do as well, right? And I don't want to disappoint people waiting for some feature request or for some pull request or for something like that.
Nginx Incorporated had a conference last week where they actually announced a greater commitment to open source and that they will have a full-time person working in the upstream Ingress Nginx community.
This is actually fun because they have reached me and James. Before they announced that, they said, hey, we want to help you with that. So how can we help you? And by that time, we have decided to make some biweekly meetings of the Ingress Nginx as a SigNetwork sub-project. And they have started to join. Some problematic issues like a core dump that's happening or ways to improve Nginx, they actually are participating. They are helping with some issue triage and some code review. The good thing about that is that the project still keeps neutral. So that's not an Nginx incorporated project. It's still the Kubernetes community project. But my thought is that they knew that that was going to be bad for them if no one maintains that. Mm-hmm. It's still like the Nginx word on the Nginx Ingress name, which is the mainly used project. So I think that once that project became unsupported, people would start migrating to other projects that would be Nginx, but would be something else, like HAProxy, Contour, or anything else. Mm-hmm. So it was cool from their part to reach us and say, hey, okay, we want to help you in that, and we are going to put some effort in that. And they are really helping us during the meetings and doing some issue triage and helping with other codes. I just hope that sometime they decide to make hot reloads open source. I'm just kidding.
The other thing that Kubernetes SigNetwork is working on in the Ingress space is effectively the V2 implementation in the Gateway API. Part of the announcement from Nginx Incorporated was that they would be putting some engineers to work on that project as well, whether it be for the community version or for their commercial versions of Nginx. How do you see the transition between Ingress V1 to the new Gateway API?
I'm going to talk about that, but Alejandro was also part of that on passing time, so I think that he can complement that. As I wasn't expecting to work on Ingress Nginx or any other Ingress implementation by the beginning of this year, I wasn't following the Gateway API work that was being done by the community on that. So it's not something new to me because it was actually announced on KubeCon Barcelona 2019. So Bowie and team and other folks, they have shown their idea of Gateway API, but I wasn't following that. I think it's going to be good of having Nginx folks working on that. On the other hand, I need to give a shout out to Alejandro because the way that he implemented Ingress Nginx, it's going to make my life easy. I wouldn't say too much easy because it's hard to migrate to Gateway API, but it's going to be easy to convert the structure expected from Gateway API to the structure expected from Ingress Nginx. We are already planning the Gateway API implementation in Ingress Nginx as well, as soon as we can get rid of all of the version 1 bugs and the problems with Ingress class that we weren't expecting. As soon as we get rid of that, the community is talking about how can we implement that and getting feedbacks from the community as well.
Gateway API is a huge step forward to what we have now with Ingress, and there's more common ground right now against the different implementations. It's going to take some time reach a stable API and see exactly what it means between different implementations. That is also one of the main complaints with Ingress, why the implementations are so different between each other, how we can also expose the same core features.
Now, both of you have taken on new roles in the Kubernetes ecosystem this year. Alejandro, you're now working for Gitpod, and Ricardo, you're now working for VMware. I imagine the experience that you had working on Ingress Nginx may have been helpful during the job search process?
Yes, of course. It's a lot easier now that you can show the work in the Kubernetes organization. So yeah, it was easier than expected, you can say.
Yeah, me too. This is my first role actually as a software developer. I've been always like a sysadmin, SRE, you can call whatever you want, depending on your age. Yeah, it was really helpful.
Is working on Ingress Nginx now part of either of your roles going forward?
Not online. I do this mostly weekends or during night. Mostly on weekends.
So we still need to get that GitHub sponsors page up for you, is what I'm hearing. If we've learned anything from Alex Ellis, it's that people just don't sponsor open source.
Yeah, Alex got a really strong opinion about that, and I agree with him because he does a lot of cool stuff. He does OpenFAS, he does inlets, he does a lot of stuff, but still, he decides to do those things as jobs, but those things doesn't pay his bills. Mm-hmm. It's hard, and I really invite people to, if you have like $5 or $10 or whatever you decide to sponsor that project that you like. I'm not asking for Ingress Nginx because I do that as a fun when I can. Mm-hmm. This must be something that people really should know, that maintainers, they work when they can and not when you need. So if you need something, just pay for a license or sponsor someone to do that if it's part of your job. Alex got a really good point on that. And I think that if you want to help a maintainer, just go and sponsor him or her with whatever money you can.
The project has just released version 1.0. So first of all, congratulations to both of you.
I had nothing to do. Just thank you, Ricardo, for 1.0.
Yeah, in fairness, I'm sure you have a little more than nothing to do with it.
95% of the code is yours. I just rewrote it. It was launched this year. The biggest change of 1.0 is actually supporting the version 1 Ingress API. This is the major change. There is nothing more like a feature like a hot reload or a new web application firewall or something like that. Talking with the community, we decided that as soon as Ingress reaches V1 API, which was a complaint about a lot of cloud providers as well, because I remember about that discussion that, hey, we use a V1 Beta 1 API, so when you decide to change that, it's going to break everything. So yeah, when SIG Network decided to change from V1 Beta 1 to V1, a lot of things changed and a lot of things broke. And I keep making some jokes about that with Rob Scott, like saying, hey, wasn't that easy to change that? But anyway, we decided to make it GA with the API getting GA. So the biggest change was the version 1 API and the Ingress class implementation. And Ingress class implementation broke a lot of stuff. So we are still thinking about adding some rollback or some safeguard for users that want to migrate to version 1 because the other one is going to be deprecated, also because the version 1 Beta 1 API is getting deprecated from the Ingress object. And yeah, that was the biggest change.
Something that I think people care a lot about is the magic of a 1.0 version number. Whether or not that means something is generally available, people say, well, hey, 0 point whatever, I'm scared of that. I don't want to run that thing. And then the mystique of having gone to 1.0, but it sounds like it wasn't so much a we've finally tested it, it's that there was a breaking change and we are, again, properly applying semantic versioning.
Yeah, that was the decision, actually. It was saying something like, hey, we can say that now we have semantic version, we are going to follow the semantic version, we are going to have some bug fix releases or some feature releases. We are now happy that we have this stable API as well. So we can say that we have finally reached stable because the API reached stable on Kubernetes API. So now may have a deprecation plan as well.
Another way to look at this is, Alejandro, you ran this project for what, 5.5 years and you couldn't get out of 0 point something? Ricardo takes it for 6 weeks and look, 1.0.
Yeah. No, actually, I never wanted to reach 1.0.
You wanted to just asymptotically approach it. 0.9999999.
Yeah, but the reason for that is what you expect from that. If you say 1.0, it's okay, there's going to be a 1.01 and 1.1 and 1.0. Mm-hmm. You are committing to multiple versions and multiple branches, and that was not the reality in the project. That's it.
It became a problem because we now have two branches, the legacy one and the new one.
Yes. You've mentioned a couple of things, hot reloads, obviously, web application firewall features and so on. What things would you like to see develop in the project over time?
First of all, I want to see some old problems getting stabilized, right? So we have some old problems that we've seen people complaining about that, even the image size because of mod security, which is an old problem, or problems dealing with reconciliation that I want to see it solved. So I am really focused with the community on bug fixes. And for the next feature versions, I want to start working with QRefence as an alternative to mod security. I don't want to drop mod security. Alejandro presented me the mod security maintainer, which is a Brazilian, and I didn't know about that. So it's really cool because we got this Falk as well. But I want to at least try to decouple things and leave for users the opportunity to choose which web application firewall you want. And those choices don't impact in the building process of ingress in Nginx. Also, I want to see as a feature a gateway API is implemented, because I think it's kind of weird that we have all of the other community implementations with gateway APIs doing their implementation. So we have in HAProxy, we have in Contour, we have in Kong, I guess, and we don't have in ingress in Nginx. So I think we are sending a message here that we are also keeping the development if we implement gateway API. We support gateway API as well. So this is the feature that I want to see for the next few months. Some web application firewall, something focused on security, and something on the gateway API as well.
Would you say that becomes Ingress Nginx 2.x, or are we now talking about renaming or forking the project and having gateway API Nginx?
No, it's going to be probably Ingress Nginx version 1.2.0 or something like that, like Ingress Nginx with lasers. I don't know if we are going to rename actually the project, or some of the projects are going to be renamed as well, because this is something that's generating confusion between the Ingress Nginx community and the Ingress Nginx from the Nginx Incorporation. So this is something that we are actually discussing with Nginx and going to bring to steering committee as well to say, hey, how can we get this confusion away? Because people go to Google search and search for Ingress, Nginx something, and they usually are facing problems with Nginx Incorporation, and they came into us, or vice versa.
That sounds like something that the new person from Nginx could clear up for you.
Yeah, we actually are asking them just to, hey, just solve that for us.
Yeah, merge the two projects, or rename the company or something. What are you going to do?
Yeah, sounds like a good approach. I'm not the one to decide, but I think they should do that.
And Alejandro, from talking to you throughout this, it feels to me like you believe the project is in good hands.
Yes, of course. Thanks to Ricardo that he stepped in the project to help. If it wasn't for you, this was not in the current state, now that you created the community around the project itself. So thank you again.
And thank you very much, both of you, for joining us today.
Thank you again, Craig.
Thank you.
You can find Ricardo on Twitter at rpcats. You can find Alejandro on Twitter at aledbf. And you can find both of them on the Kubernetes Slack. You can find Ingress Nginx at kubernetes.github.io/ingress-nginx.
Thanks for listening. As always, if you enjoyed the show, please help us spread the word and tell a friend. If you have any feedback for us, you can find us on Twitter at KubernetesPod, or reach us by email at kubernetespodcast@google.com.
You can also check out our website at kubernetespodcast.com, where you will find transcripts and show notes, as well as links to subscribe. Until next time, take care.
See you later.